Hello, this is Joy Ray Freeman. The following program was produced and broadcast during 2001. I am a master healer, spiritual warrior, writer, and workshop retreat facilitator. My intent is to assist those who are ready to become whole and productive contributors for creating a better world. Please check out my main website for empowerment and or healing opportunities. Joy, number two, letter U, .org. Enjoy the program.
This is Joy Ray Freeman, bringing joy to the world. Are you still carrying that around? Seriously, how much room in your day is taken up with the past? Traffic, disrespect from others, pain, anger, or regrets, old grudges, a former boss, a not-so-true friend, or someone special who didn't live up to your expectations. Someone would have, could have, should have. Well, I don't mean to sound harsh, but for Pete's sake, what are you doing lugging all of that around when you could be loading up with creativity, new experiences, good books, a new hobby, a better health routine, and stepping into a whole new you? Oh, I know, it's not easy, but it is possible. Forgive. Let it go. Send love and peace to the source of your blockage, and open up to newness. The light and the spirit of healing. In gratitude and faith, we seek your light. In joy, we rise as our soul takes flight to meet you in the spheres above and know the wonder and fullness of your love. The light of healing now stirs within, and our new life and light begins. We are now one with perfect love, our heart and mind in tune with God above. May the spirit of healing alight on all, with beating wings of peace in answer to our call. May God, through Jesus, set us free as we evolve to be life's mastery. We are grateful, grateful, grateful for God above. We are grateful, grateful, grateful to the Christ whose name is love. We are grateful, grateful, grateful to his eternal spirit within the healing dove.
She wept at the horrors that I cannot explain. If the world were my lover, I would never forsake her. I would always remember her name. And I would do the same for you, the same for you, for you are of my world. And I will do whatever I must do, whatever to be true, to a lover of such beauty.
The Power of Stories by Karen Alfelt Child. My son has grown up loving stories. He once expressed to me a wish that he had lived in the days of knights and questing of dragons. To his young mind, such a life seemed exciting and adventurous. I didn't point out that to actually hunt down dragons would probably involve a lot of pain, fatigue, and other discomforts. Perhaps that wouldn't matter when the glorious quest came to an end. But my son resigned himself to the fact that such things were only the stuff of fictional stories, not real at all, at least not anymore. But is this really so? Are the kinds of quests, battles, and victories that appear in heroic tales merely the products of over-imaginative thinking? Why do stories remain such an important element in every human culture? What is it about stories that reaches us and remains for generation after generation? All stories have messages that deal with human issues. Becoming engrossed in a story allows us to experience those messages in a very effective way, because they reach our feelings and allow us to walk in the shoes of the characters portrayed. Good stories provide a feeling of connectedness with other human beings, because we all share many similar emotions and experiences. But how can we relate to a hero or heroine who encounters dangers and circumstances that would never happen in our own daily lives. Do fantasy stories serve any real purpose? Behind our daily activities, reactions, and choices lie powerful happenings of the spirit that we are only dimly aware of. On the spiritual level, we all encounter danger and imprisonment when negative mindsets try to control us. We engage in quests and battles as we seek the truth and fight against obstacles in our way. We experience losses and grief as we leave behind stages of life that were dear to us, but often find that new revelations and discoveries rise up out of the ashes. This is one reason why even fantasy stories can touch us so. We can get caught up following a fictional hero on his quest because we have been there on some level. We have traveled, searching, encountering obstacles and dangers. With every choice we've made to resist a negative way of behaving, we have engaged in a battle and won. Sometimes we have even been imprisoned by enemies called anger or revenge or hopelessness. With every act of seeking God's truth to help us through our troubles, we have been on a quest searching for that magic artifact which can help conquer the powers of darkness. Reading tales of heroism can stir that heroic drive which lies somewhere in all of us. That willingness to go forward no matter what the danger, to fight our battles with the power of God, to protect the innocent and the good, to banish the evil, to push on to victory. Stories can also be used as a powerful tool in understanding issues, both within ourselves and in our dealings with others. Relationship counselor Gary Smalley speaks about the power of emotional word pictures, a method of describing an issue or concept in the form of an image or story, in order to get a point across more clearly. The parables of Jesus are wonderful examples of emotional word pictures. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, for instance, Jesus uses a story to vividly show the nature of goodness in people which we are to look upon as our neighbor. In the Old Testament, the prophet Nathan used an emotional word picture to confront King David about the sinful taking of Bathsheba, who was another man's wife. At God's command, Nathan came to David, and before saying anything else, this prophet told the king a story. There were two men in one city, the prophet began, one rich and one poor. The rich man had exceedingly many flocks and herds. But the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished. And it grew up together with him and all his children. It ate of his own food and drank from his own cup and lay in his bosom. And it was like a daughter to him. When a traveler came, the rich man refused to take from his own flock to prepare food for the wayfaring man. But he took the poor man's lamb and prepared it for the man who had come to him. King David was moved to anger by this story against the rich man who had done this unjust act. "As the Lord lives," he told Nathan, "the man who has done this shall surely die. And he shall restore fourfold for the lamb, because he did this thing, and because he had no pity." The story clearly described a very unfair situation in which a man who had much selfishly took a beloved thing from a man who had little. When David had heard the story and had fully felt the injustice of the situation, Nathan said to the king, "You are that man." David had done this very same cruel thing. Had Nathan come and first confronted David about the woman Bathsheba, David probably would have come up with all sorts of excuses and justifications. But the power of the story left David no choice than to see and admit his wrong. one successful incident I had using an emotional word picture several years ago involved some young boys in our neighborhood. There was a new boy named Eric at our little church school, and he was having a hard time fitting in with the rest of the boys there, who had all grown up together. Our neighborhood boys didn't feel inspired to include him in their games. This new boy didn't do anything wrong, but his parents were divorced and his father lived far away, so he tended to talk real big about his father. I could see he was trying to impress the others to try and find a way in, but our neighborhood boys found his talk pretty annoying. They didn't care for all the bragging about his dad. They weren't attacking this boy in any way, but they couldn't make any efforts to welcome him. I was saddened by this situation, but wasn't sure what to do. I knew that a direct appeal for them to include him would only bring denials and excuses. We weren't doing anything mean. Besides, he brags a lot. It's annoying. So I decided to use this word image technique and see if I could get through to them. When I had them all together, I asked them to imagine a person, a normal person with strengths and faults, who had been put in prison even though he hadn't done anything wrong. Many people walked by the prison each day. They all knew he hadn't really done anything criminal, and any one of them could have gone over and let him out, but nobody did. The boy's reaction to this description was just as I had hoped. That's really unfair. Somebody should let him out. Then I told them that Eric was the one imprisoned, with no one letting him out of his lonely life at the school. I told them that any one of them that would do something to let him out of the prison would be a hero. This story affected the boys and inspired them to start inviting him into their activities. Things improved for Eric for the rest of his time at our school. In our spiritual quests and battles, we will inevitably feel some pain, fatigue, and other discomforts, just like a knight in pursuit of treasure or a sinister dragon. But the victories that come when we draw strength from God, the ultimate hero, will bring the same joy that we feel when we come into the glorious climax of a wonderful story.
The notes I handle no better than many pianists, but the pauses between the notes, that is where the art resides. By Arthur Schnabel. A Chopin piano nocturne played by a novice musician and by a virtuoso will not sound the same. That's because one of the two pianists has had a lifetime to practice the music as well as to learn when to pause in order to color the notes with passion. So it is with the concerto of our lives. Individual notes must be learned and played and practiced before we achieve harmony. And above all, we must learn how to pause. Harmony is the inner cadence of contentment we feel when the melody of life is in tune. When somehow we're able to strike the right chord to balance the expectations of our families and our responsibilities in the world on the one hand, with our inner needs for spiritual growth and personal expression on the other. This is one of the most difficult challenges any woman faces because it requires that we make choices every day. And yet most of us often feel too tired to choose anything more than what to have for dinner. Perhaps this explains why we often hear only a cacophony of dissident demands that drown out the symphonies our souls long to compose. Usually, when the distractions of daily life deplete our energy, the first thing we eliminate is the thing we need the most: quiet, reflective time. Time to dream, time to think, time to contemplate what's working and what's not, so that we can make changes for the better. On the simple abundance path, we begin to learn how to pause. As we bring the principles of gratitude, simplicity, and order into our lives, harmony emerges. We learn to balance demands with pleasures, moments of solitude with a need for companionship, work with play, activity, and rest. The inner woman with the outer packaging. Today, just try slowing down. Approach the day as if it were an adagio, a melody played in an easy, graceful manner. Listen to music that soothes and uplifts your spirit. And while you listen, pause to consider how all the individual notes come together harmoniously to give expression to the entire score. So it shall be with your world. With harmony as your guide, trust that your everyday moments will soon begin to resonate in a rhapsody of fulfillment.
Seven seas, relative humanities. Everywhere I look, I see someone looking back at me. Nation states and borderlines, divided states of mind. Politics comes to blows, and everybody wants to know, whose world is this? Whose world is this? Whose world is this? First world riding high, second world standing by, third world under fire. Funny how we all conspire. We don't know, 'cause we can't see how such a way could come to be. Riding on a spinning wheel, soon enough will be revealed. Whose world is this? Whose world is this? Whose world is this? What kind of world will our children be seeing after all is said and done?
What kind of creed have we come to believe? That they may never receive one. Said and done. What kind of creed must we come to believe if they are ever to receive one?
Four winds, seven seas. Relative humanity. Everywhere I look, I see someone looking back at me.
The time has come to live beyond all fear. The time has come to release all anger. The time has come to see the work of Spirit all around. The time has come to accept responsibility for everything in life. The pain, the sorrow, the sickness, the disappointments, and the joy, the humor, the friendships, the abundance. All are gifts we give ourselves. All are perfect opportunities to be all we are and to create who we choose to be. The time has come to see all judgments as reflections of ourself, to greet all others as aspects of ourself, to honor the paths all others tread, to offer all others the love whence all came. The time has come to join in this grand adventure of self-creation, consciously choosing to be the most glorious you that always is. During the French Revolution, hundreds of people were guillotined. One day, three men were led up to die. One was a lawyer, one was a doctor, and the third was an engineer. The lawyer was to die first. He was led to the guillotine, the attending priest blessed him, and he knelt with his head on the guillotine. The blade was released, but stopped halfway down its path. The priest, seeing an opportunity, quickly said, "Gentlemen, God has spoken and said this man is to be spared. We cannot kill him." The executioner agreed, and the lawyer was set free. The doctor was next. He was blessed by the priest, then knelt and placed his head down. The blade was released and again stopped halfway down. Again, the priest intervened. "Gentlemen, God has again spoken. We cannot kill this man." The executioner agreed, and the doctor was set free. At last, it was the engineer's turn. He was blessed by the priest and knelt. But before he placed his head on the guillotine, he looked up. Suddenly, he leapt to his feet and cried, "Oh, I see the problem."
We were playing one day, the middle child and me. A little girl of 5 years, she was serving tea. She had lined up the dolls, and then she told me these words: "You gotta make sure my children get seconds and thirds, and it's seconds and thirds, that's what they should get, not the back of a hand or a life of regret." Now a 5-year-old woman says these little words: "You gotta make sure my children get seconds and thirds." Another day, the same room, the oldest child of three, a little boy of 6 years, pretending to be the father he barely knew, the one who OD'd and died. Now he's protecting his sisters from their mother's hard life. But it's seconds and thirds, that's what he should get, not an early adulthood or abuse or neglect. Now a 6-year-old man has to hide how he hurts, instead of holding his plate up for seconds and prayers. There's some kind of thread that these children hang on to, and hope that their parents get better one day. Though the thread's awfully thin, it can cover the wounding, and that's where hope gets in the way. So the last one arrives, the youngest of all. A little girl, only 4, so delicate and frail. We play doctor and nurse. We use band-aids each time. There were never enough for all the hurts that she'd find. She'd walk out of my office from her head to her toes, all covered with band-aids, and God only knows how she'll get to her healing through all of that pain. Dear Lord, let me help if I can. Now these 3 little souls have new parents today, adopted by grace, and a couple who said they'd be there to provide, to protect and to love, in a home where there'd be no drinking or drugs, only seconds and thirds. That's what they would get. Not a sentence to life, where their needs were not met. And I hope that they'll soar like the clouds and the birds, while they're feasting and flying on seconds and thirds. While they're feasting and flying on seconds and thirds.
If you look to others for fulfillment, you will never truly be fulfilled. If your happiness depends on money, you will never be happy with yourself. Be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. When you realize there is nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you. By Lao Tzu. Thank you.
my head with each sunrise if I had a simple soul. When I was weary, I'd close my eyes if I had a simple soul. Not too complicated to shiver when I'm cold. I make my home where I'm bound if I had a simple soul. Say my prayers and hope to God, I know He will know. I'll take my daily bread when hunger starts to grow. Doesn't have to be that hard. If it hurts you, let it go. What you see is what you are. You've got a simple soul, a simple soul. To go, but it only takes a child to see the diamonds in the cold. It's not so easy when the habit takes a hold. I never knew it would be so hard to keep my simple soul, simple soul.
There is no law of disease, by Joseph Goldsmith. Some years ago, a physician came to me with a presumably incurable disease. Now, one cannot very well explain the nothingness of disease or its unreal nature to a doctor, because he is devoting his life to trying to cure disease. Nevertheless, I could say to him, this disease has no law to support it. If it had a law, you could not cure it because you cannot break a law. You cannot break the law of 2 times 2 is 4. You cannot break the law that H2O is water. You cannot break anything that has a law. And so, if a disease had a law to support it, it would be an eternal disease because it would be perpetuated by its law. If disease had a law, would not that law have come from God? Is not God the one and only lawgiver? If disease had a law of God governing it, could anybody stop the disease? Or can disease be healed only because it has no law of God to support it? Because in his own mind, this physician was able to accept the truth that if anything has a law, it has immortality, he had a very beautiful healing. If you can grasp the principle that disease has no law, it will fall by the very fact that you have recognized its nothingness. If you can comprehend and really understand this truth, the appearance will be dissolved. If you can recognize the truth that God is not responsible for disease and death, you will destroy them both. This is the truth that makes you free. Until next time, this is Joy Ray Freeman, wishing joy to the world.